Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
We have a correction for this show. Reporter Ann Doss-Helms wrongly states that school board candidate Annette Albright was previously charged in an altercation involving students. Albright was never charged, and the district attorney's office concluded her actions were reasonable and not unlawful.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Pick up your pencils, grab a notebook, and listen up. It's time to start studying for school board elections. There are many important decisions ahead for the school board, as always, but turnout and interest in these races tends to lag. Last month, at a candidates forum, Black Political Caucus President Khalif Rhodes told WFAE that parents and residents need to pay attention.
The school board is extremely important. The folks that sit there determine how our children go to school and what benefits and resources they are allocated. And so by all means, I hope that they know.
And soon after that, after another forum, this one held in Cornelius, Lake Norman Chamber of Commerce President Bill Russell said people care about these races, even as many of them had left before the school board candidates got to speak.
Well, this is a very important decision for all of us. As you heard in there just now, there are some people who are big-time advocates of CMS. There's some a little bit disappointed in CMS in terms of being too big.
So if you're feeling a little bit lost, like me in my high school trigonometry class, fear not. While I am your mere hall monitor, we have three experts in studio today to teach you about school board elections. They are Ann Doss-Helms from WFAE. Good morning.
Good morning.
Annie Ma of the Charlotte Observer, if I can spit it out. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning.
And soon to join us will be Dedrick Smith from WBTV.
Dedrick Russell.
I'm so sorry. Dedrick Russell. Okay, we're off to a flying start. We're going to have to put me
and
in
timeout. We have virtually the same name, so no confusion there.
I mean, we're going to have to put me in timeout already. So let's start with a couple of basics about this topic. CMS has close to 150,000 students. They have 19,000 employees and a $1.6 billion budget. All of that is governed by a 9-member school board. And of those 9 members who serve staggered 4-year terms, all 3 at-large seats are on the ballot this year, which is what we're going to talk about. There are 13 candidates on the ballot. These are nonpartisan positions. And if this is not enough, and really, can you ever get enough of school board elections? WFAE has a full voter's guide online at WFAE.org. We're going to go through all the candidates and the issues, but I guess to start, I'd like to hear each of you, because you are so immersed in this, just give us an overview of why this particular school board election is important and what kinds of issues are likely to bubble up. I'll start with you, Annie Ma.
Yeah, so this race is going to be pretty important. There are a lot of big issues that the school board needs to tackle, including student assignment in the next couple of years, the budget, just big things that govern how things in CMS work. And there's been a lot of talk about equity and those initiatives and how do you close the achievement gap in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, and the board has really involved itself in that process.
And Anne, from your perspective, what stands out about this one?
Definitely some of those issues that she mentioned. School construction is a huge hot topic right now. Every time there's a discussion within the suburbs, there's a lot of tension around that. We passed bonds in 2017. It tends to be a 4-year cycle, so that means in the very near future they're going to start ranking priorities for the next batch of school bonds, and they have this Municipal Concerns Act in which they said the schools or the towns that have the authority to do municipal charter schools are going to the back of the line. And they have just voted to take Cornelius off of that. It's not clear whether they will really enforce that on the others, but that's going to be a real hot button issue for people. And of course, everybody's watching the superintendency, because that just seems to be something that they do go through a couple of them every 4 years. I think everybody's hoping that will not happen this time around. But again, this batch of school board members will be a factor in deciding whether we keep a superintendent or go through the revolving door again.
And we are already in early voting. The election is on November 5th. And I think 2 years ago, the turnout was about 21%. This year, I've heard predictions in the 10 to 15% range. So that makes it even more important for these candidates to get out one-on-one with people, because literally every vote really counts.
Yeah, I think when 4 years ago, which was the last at large, it was about 15% turnout. And Again, you will have a ballot with 13 people on it, no matter where you live in Mecklenburg County. You can pick up to three, and that's sort of important to remember, is that if there's only one or two candidates that you really know about and care about, you don't have to vote for three. But what happens, and I think some people don't vote in the school board races. I think that this time of year, I kind of always feel like Linus sitting out in the pumpkin patch waiting for the great pumpkin. You know, this is the year that everybody will realize how important this is. But the reality is it's a nonpartisan race, so you haven't had primaries. You don't have sort of that team spirit of, you know, yay for my team and boo for the other team that you do when there's D's and R's next to the name. It's an off-year election, so that's always lower than the even-year elections. And these guys don't have taxing authority, so they can't make your taxes higher or lower. And I think that's one of those hot-button issues that really motivates people. So it just tends to be a thing where no matter how much we report about this, you talk to people at the polls and they say, oh, yeah, I came to vote for the mayor, or I came to vote in the sales tax referendum. Who knew there was a school board race?
It's only a little $1.6 billion operation. And you just mentioned when people go to the polls and they pull up the ballot, they're going to see 13 names. They can choose three. I'm going to read those 13 names and we'll go through them again. But it's Annette Albright, Elise Dashew, Jennifer De La Hara, Greg Denley, Jenna Moorhead, Donna Parker Tate, Jordan Panetta, Olivia Scott, Lenora Shipp, Stephanie Sneed, Duncan St. Clair, Queen Thompson, and Monty Witherspoon. Yes, there will be a quiz at the end of this hour. Dedrick Russell has just walked in and joined us from WBTV, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Dedrick. I started by asking Annie and Ann, what stands out about this particular school board race? What makes this one important? They're all important for different reasons. When you take a big picture view, what do you see?
Well, I see that two incumbents are not running again. So we have one incumbent who's running, and you have two seats that are open for people who have never served on the school board before. And as the district is in a crossroads, new superintendent, they still have academic achievement goals that they have to reach, that that those two new school board members are going to have to hit the ground running, because time is of the essence, because everyone who is here, we've been covering CMS for several years, and academic achievement has always been the issue. And, you know, we've done stories where there have been a generation that have passed through a whole school, and still that school is still struggling when it comes to educating, especially brown and black kids.
When you mentioned that we have two incumbents that will not be on the ballot, right? We have Mary McRae and Erica Ellis Stewart. Let's spend a moment or two on what will be lost, what their impact was, particularly with Mary McRae, who I think has been the chair of the board for 7 years.
7 years at a time when nobody has stayed in leadership in this city. You know, mayors, city managers, county managers, chairman of the county commissioners, they've all been churning, and she's just kind of been there. And I think if you look back to 8 years ago, and that was when that incumbency is a very strong factor in re-election. Incumbents tend to get re-elected, not always, but usually. Mm-hmm. So these are the times when you see real changes in leadership. And 8 years ago, Mary McRae and Erica Ellis Stewart got elected. They immediately swept in, and Erica was elected chair and Mary was vice chair. That arrangement lasted for 1 year. I think Mary has a style that works better with her colleagues. She became the chair, and you think about the things she's led through. They've gotten national awards. In some ways, they've been very highly lauded, but they've also had these two superintendent ousters where they, in one case, gave a story that was not really true, that, gosh, Heath Morrison was just going to take care of his mom. And in the other case, just said, we aren't telling you what's going on here. We just need to move on. So, you know, that whether you like how she's handled it or not, she's been really crucial. And Erica Ellis Stewart has not been the chair, but she has really, I think, emerged as a strong voice for the black and brown kids. She's been kind of a watchdog on the board. I think she had clashes with both of the superintendents who got forced out, you know, kind of at a time when everybody else was trying really hard to make nice. She was pushing them on some things. And I think when Heath Morrison left, one of the things that actually came out was that he had, in the case of some costs that he was not leveling with the board about, and he had apparently told somebody, Erica Ellis Stewart is going to ask about this. Here's how we're going to avoid that question. So she's been an important player.
And also she's been important because she has been the voice of the school board, because we know we live in a community where we want answers. And she has been the spokesperson for the school board. So, you know, you're going to need a person who is able to address the media, who is able to answer the tough questions, and who is able to get the story out and get the story correct. And Mary McCrae has done that, and that's why she has been elected the board leader, because the board members, they depend on her. Because, you know, when you call board members, they say, hey, call Mary, yeah. call Mary, yeah. call Mary. So now, since Mary is not going to be on
Hot
the board,
potato, right?
Who are we going to call?
Yeah. And by the way, there's a controversy roughly every 25 minutes with CMS. So, yeah, that's a busy job. Annie Ma, you are new to the beat and new to Charlotte, but from what you have learned and heard so far, what's your sense of that transition from Mary McRae to a person to be named later in terms of leading the school board?
I think it'll be interesting. Mary had definitely has a style and is a very like calm and assured leader. She runs those meetings really efficiently, which I think we all appreciate. But, you know, she has a vision. She has been very outspoken about equity, and it'll be interesting to see who takes up that mantle and whether they'll adopt the same issues that she has or whether the board will head in a different direction. My sense is that equity will still be top of mind no matter how whoever takes over as leadership.
And that's the voice of Annie Ma. She is the education reporter at the Charlotte Observer. Also on our panel today, Ann Doss Helms from WFAE and Dedrick Russell from WBTV. Let's talk about the incumbent who is in this race among the 13 candidates. That is Elise Dashew. What is her approach? What has been her, legacy, so to speak, as a school board member to date?
Well, I think she is very well known. Like I said, incumbents, I think, have an advantage going in. She actually ran 8 years ago and fell just short as an unaffiliated voter. She then became a Democrat and ran and got elected. So she has been out there in the community. She has been very visible. She's the top fundraiser for the campaign money. She's been at a lot of forums. And I think she is being groomed to be chair. About a year ago, I asked Mary about her plans, and she said, I'm not running, and I want to spend this year getting somebody ready to step in as chair. So I think the presumption, and you can never presume anything when there's, you know, nine people electing one of their peers, but the presumption is that Elise is being prepared to take over the chairmanship. When she goes to these panels, everybody's criticizing the board and CMS, and she says, these issues are real, but there are no quick solutions. This takes really long-term persistence. I'm battle-tested and battle-scarred. I've been through the learning curve. You need me to come back and help with this.
Yeah, she has name recognition, and she also credits herself with using her skill to help get the $922 million bond referendum passed, and she has great community support. She has a diverse community support. You know, she has former school board member Bishop Georgie Battle. He has come out to support her. You have the mayor pro tem, Julie Eisel, has come to support her, and she has support not only from the state house, but also the government center and local school board members. Mary McRae has come out to support her, and several school board members have come out to support her. So I think that will do her well when we go to the polls. But if you talk to some people in the other communities, they would say that maybe she's not as forceful as she needs to be. She's not as aggressive as she needs to be. She's always a peacemaker, which is good. But sometimes, you know, you want to, you know, get some skin in the game. And they say that during the student assignment battle that maybe she made some things that people were not happy with. And, you know, we know in CMS you can't please everybody, but, you know, go figure.
I noticed
But she does have strong support, but then other people say that, you know, we cannot waste any more time, and they want a new fresh look, and that's why she wasn't supported by the Black Political Caucus.
Yeah. And that's, I think there are candidates that are very much playing the clean slate. You know, if you're mad about the superintendent firings or ousters, if you're mad about the way they've treated the suburbs, if you're mad about anything, you know, vote for me instead of Elise Dashew.
So that's one down. We have 12 to go. We're also going to get into some of the many issues going on in the school system. Stay with us. We're going to take a quick break. Back with more on the school board elections here on Charlotte Talks.
Uh-huh.
I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg voters are deciding the Arts and Science Council's request for a quarter-cent sales tax increase to help shore up the arts and culture sector.
Organizations are in crisis, and they might be lost.
If approved, there would be new funding for the arts and money for parks and greenways and schools. But some question if a sales tax hike should be for other needs.
To me, the big community problem is affordable housing.
We'll hear from both sides in a Charlotte Talks Forum Monday, October 28th at 7 p.m. at the McGlowan Theater. Registration and details at WFAE.org.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins, and today we're taking an in-depth look at the upcoming school board election with our panel of education experts. We have Annie Ma from the Charlotte Observer, we have Dedrick Russell from WBTV, and we have Andos Helms from WFAE. So as I mentioned earlier, all three at-large seats are in play this year, and the winners will join the six district reps who are in place through 2021. They have staggered terms, and they decide everything from budgets to student assignments, all kinds of issues going on that we're going to get to in a little bit. But let's reset and kind of go through this list of endless candidates. Actually, it's just 13. So we talked a little bit about Elise Dashew, the incumbent, and we have one other candidate, Olivia Scott, who isn't actively campaigning. So that gets us to 11. So here we go with the lightning round of Jeopardy. Let's start with, we're going to just go in order of how they will appear on the ballot. Annette Albright, what do we know about Annette Albright as a candidate?
She is making her second run for the school board. She is one of two unaffiliated voters. She is a former CMS employee, and there's kind of an elaborate backstory there. She was a behavior maintenance technician at Harding High School, and there was an altercation, a shoving match, and it got videoed. She was there, and students were there, and there was contact between them, and this video went out, and she ended up getting fired and criminally charged by the school. And she then said, no, it's the school's fault because, A, I shouldn't have been there by myself while this was brewing, and B, the students assaulted me. The district attorney actually dropped the charges against her and charged the students, and she ended up suing CMS over this. By this point, she was a former employee. So she filed this lawsuit against the Board of Education shortly before she filed in 2017 to run for the Board of Education. So I had the privilege of writing a story saying this candidate could be suing herself if she wins.
That's certainly a unique perspective.
And she was asking to be reinstated to her job. So if that had happened, she couldn't have stayed on the board if she had won. So, but anyway, all that is to sort of say this is why people may know about her and why she has some very strong opinions that things are not going well in CMS. She is one of the most strongly, you know, saying we need a change in leadership. They've handled things badly. They're not transparent. Her suit, she says, part of it was dismissed and part of it was settled with a non-disclosure. So that whole thing is not in play this time around. If she is elected, she will not be suing herself.
So very much a reformer yes. In terms of approach.
And she has taken her concerns to Capitol Hill, where she has met with the Secretary of Education, talking about safety in schools. So when you hear her at all of the forums that I have been to, she is a staunch critic of the school board, and she says now is the time for change. So that is her platform, that everything is wrong with CMS.
And she is out there. She's at the forum. She's on social media. She's highly visible.
Yeah, she does not bite her tongue.
Okay. And I mentioned that these are nonpartisan races, but I think, Ann, you had gone back, and probably others have too, and checked voter registration. We have 10 Democrats, 2 unaffiliated, and 1 Republican among the 13
that is
candidates.
Correct.
Okay. Next up, we have Jennifer De La Jara. I think she is leaning heavily into the focus on immigrants and education. What do we know about Jennifer?
So Jennifer is the director of literacy partnerships with CMS schools at International House. She has some experience teaching, but most of her work has been with refugee and immigrant communities. And like you said, she's really leaning into that experience, really saying she'll draw on that to be a voice for just one of the fastest growing segments of CMS students to advocate for their needs, which are sort of different from other questions of equity and access that the school district is trying to tackle.
And the diversity, I'm assuming between the three of you, somebody knows the diversity numbers. What are they in CMS right now?
I think that the student population is about 38% African American and 27% each white and Hispanic.
So,
and Jennifer is not personally of Latino descent, but she is married to a Latino man. She has worked a lot with the immigrant community. That community really has not had much of a voice in policy and politics, I think, for a number of reasons. So she is definitely playing up that she has the personal experience, the professional experience. She also, interestingly, another thing I checked on the voter registrations were where people live. She is the only one who does not live in Charlotte. She lives in Davidson, and I believe she made reference at a forum to being fairly recently moved there, but which is interesting because another candidate we'll talk about talks about being the voice for the suburbs, but she is the only one who actually lives in one of the towns.
That is interesting. Our next candidate is Greg Denley, who is the lone Republican. I believe he is a teacher at University of Phoenix. What kind of viewpoint does he bring to the race?
Well, I know I don't know if he's real. I think from talking to voters, I guess he showed up at the Cornelius.
Yes, I was there at that
forum, and I know that what he said caught their attention, saying that he will be a good representative of the suburbs of the, you know, but this is an at-large position, so you're supposed to represent everybody, and I think using that type of language was a turnoff for some people. You know, if you just want to take care of the suburbs, or you know, what about the inner city kids and things like that? So I moderated the Black Political Caucus school board race, and he was not there. So I don't know if he has been.
He
very
is very
visible.
Much. He is urging people to single shot him. That is to vote for him and no one else. He is very much going as the Republican, the conservative representative. He is taking up very much with this whole municipal charter school dispute.
I was going to say, this gets right into HB 514, right?
He says, you know, and then the school board fired back with this Municipal Concerns Act that said, if you've got municipal charter school authority, you're going to the back of the line for school construction. He says, I want to see that overturned. And again, I think that the current school board is working at ways to back out of that, but he is not really trying to do the I represent all kids. He's saying, you know, if you are a Republican, if you are a suburban resident, if you are not happy with how things are going there, vote for me.
I want to let's pause for just a second with the, because I mentioned HB 514. You made a couple references to the school board's response. Let's just give a general overview of what that entails, right? It was power that was given by the state to four of the towns to build charter schools and to essentially lock out people from other towns if they wanted to. Am I describing that correctly?
Well, to use municipal tax money, which makes them different from charter schools that are authorized by these would still have to be authorized by the state, and nobody's actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, this has been a big political theater thing. There was the student assignment review, and people in the suburbs got worried that they were going to end up on the short end of the stick for this. I think they actually were pretty happy with what the school board did, but during this time they were talking to their state representatives. Bill Brawley at the time got this through. This is a thing that has not been seen in North Carolina, that a township or a town could use its tax money, essentially become a little mini school board for this charter school, and give priority to town residents.
Priority, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, they couldn't shut out others.
Okay.
But the school board was not happy about this. They said, you know, it is a slow process to fund and build a school. So they were saying, we could, you know, get tens of millions of dollars locked into this. We could be starting to build it. And then the town could say, well, actually, we're going to open a charter school next door. So this has been a point of tension.
Got it. Okay, continuing down the road with our school board candidates, we have Jenna Moorhead, who is a former school board president of a small community in Pennsylvania, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, Belafonte Area School District. It has one high school, one middle school, and four elementary schools. So we're not talking about anything on the scope of Charlotte-Mecklenburg, which has 175 schools. She is running. I mean, she responded to our questionnaire. She returns calls, but she, I don't think, has a great grasp of how you need to reach a county this big. She doesn't have a campaign website. She's not raising much money. She has a Facebook campaign page that has 5 followers. So I'm just not quite sure what to make of her.
Dedrick, Annie, are y'all seeing the same thing in terms of her not being out there a whole lot?
So I've actually seen her at an event. The school board's legal department does a "This is what it's like to be on the school board" kind of policy overview, and she was there at that. I went to one other forum. I don't recall seeing her there, so I only have those 2 points to draw off of.
Yeah, and I was at the Black Political Caucus, and you know, if you want to get on a ticket to get your name out there, you know, you should show up. And she was not there. So I guess that just shows you, you know, if you want the job or if you don't want the job or you just namesake, we just don't know. But I know that how you campaign in covering CMS school board elections, if you want the job, you are out there and you are pressing the flesh and you're kissing babies. You're at Labor Day parades. You are there to get your name out there, because that's one thing when you're in the field of 13, you have to have name recognition.
So hard to cut through the clutter.
Yeah, you have to have name recognition. So you have to get out there. So I have not seen her out there.
I think this is a really tough race for everybody. It is tough for a candidate, like you said, to get out and cover this huge sprawling. The people who are really serious about it are out almost every evening at some event. It's tough for us as reporters to cover, and it's tough for the voters. That's why I think we're hearing a lot of people saying, I don't know, what do I do in this race?
By the way, if you are saying, what do I do, one of the things you can do is go to WFAE.org and look at the voter's guide that is up about all of these school board candidates. We keep moving down the line. Donna Parker Tate, who is a retired CMS principal, and I think she's running heavily on equity and diversity priority. What do we know about her?
So one of her big issues is that she wants to focus on equity, like you said, but she talks a lot about making advanced classes available to all students and really opening up this idea of access. She's also talked to me a lot about wanting to boost community engagement and thinking about the whole child, like socio-emotional learning as well as what's in the classroom and kind of developing kids in that kind of context.
Yeah, she also wants to use her background, since she's coached principals around the country. She wants to use that background to make sure that academic achievement happens. You know, everybody has a cure of how academic achievement can happen faster. So she wants to use her expertise to make that happen and also to coach other principals and teachers in order to be, you know, to go from good to great and to make the job happen inside the classrooms.
Yeah, and she has a first-time candidate. She's a Democrat. She retired, I think, from Winterfield Elementary School in 2006. And I believe, according to her LinkedIn page, she's actually working, does principal coaching for Durham schools now.
That was the voice of Ann Doss Helms. She covers education for WFAE. We also have Annie Ma from the Charlotte Observer and Dedrick Russell from WBTV. Moving on, Jordan Panetta. He is a Teach for America alum, and he views segregated schools as a top concern and issue. What do we know about Jordan's candidacy?
Yeah, he's a CMS teacher who worked for Teach for America, and he is very passionate about making things happen inside the classrooms. In fact, last week there was a forum conducted by kids. And after that forum, Kid said that he stood out, that his answers were direct. He was able to engage with the students. There was a connection there. And so students said that if they had their choice, that he would be top of the ticket, because he's and they also asked a question about what is racism. And they said that he was the one who gave the answer that was correct in their mind. So you know, if you understand racism and things like that, then
and understand
you can
the kids.
Exactly. And so so I thought that was very interesting, that our teenagers, the students, they connected with Jordan.
And he is, to my knowledge, the first Latino school board candidate. It's possible that there was one way back when, although I doubt it because we had such a small Hispanic population then. He is actually, his mother is Irish and his father is Mexican. So being a skeptical reporter, I checked, and he's actually listed as white, not Hispanic or Latino on his voter registration, but he very much identifies as that. And again, this is a segment that is a huge part of the CMS student body, an important part of this community and the economy and, you know, civic life here. So one of his things is he's saying, I would be a voice, you know, and for boys of color who do struggle in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I, much as you were describing Jennifer De La Jara, it seems like tying into this idea of immigrants, increasing diversity in CMS, that is going to be a bigger and bigger issue. We have next Lenora Shipp. I think she's a former principal and worked at CMS for 33 years. Is that right?
Yep. And went to CMS schools. She is very much, she's a Democrat. This is her second run. She fell a little bit short in the district race last time around. But very much, you know, somebody who says, I know this district intimately, personally. I've been in there in the schools. I believe she was, when Peter Gorman did strategic staffing, where he pulled some top principals and put them into some of the most challenging schools, she was one of those. And she does have the endorsement of the Black Political Caucus and the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Association of Educators, both of which are groups that, you know, in addition to sort of giving you a thumbs up, may have some ability to get that word out to voters.
We have an interesting candidate here, Duncan St. Clair. He owns a coffee business, and one of the big issues for him as a candidate is climate change. How could a school board affect climate change?
So Duncan talks a lot about how, in addition to serving kids, the school board also does a lot of more like administrative and facilities and operations tasks. And for him, the idea of climate change is to take on that mantle because you're managing all these buildings and, you know, you're kind of working with kids' futures. So those issues intersect really well. He is a Charlotte native. He graduated from West Charlotte High School and now owns a coffee business. So his roots to CMS are pretty deep. I believe his father was also a teacher in CMS as well. So he's very much a Charlotte native and talks a lot about that.
He also talks about separating the district into smaller districts, which is not something that you normally see among people who are running for a seat on the county. It has happened before. And this is, as we know, a theme that's been out there for decades and is very popular sometimes among the suburbs. But he is the only one that I have heard that says this might be a good idea.
And when it comes to students, they said that at that forum last week that he dropped the ball on some questions. So I guess he has to get some cool points if he wants to to win, I guess.
2-minute warning. Let's see if we can get through the last two. Queen Thompson, she's a former CMS employee and worked in federal compliance. She talks a lot about a different form of language, right, not calling schools failing.
Yeah, and this is her fourth run for the school board. She is sort of like Annette Albright. She is very, very critical of the way things are. Not totally clear on what she would do to fix it, except that she says she has this knowledge as a former compliance officer. She had the most interesting answer on our survey. She is going to do a series of illustrated stories called Schoolhouse Secret that will deal with problems in CMS.
There you go. Monty Witherspoon, the final candidate on the ballot. He is a pastor, and he brings some interesting personal experience to his campaign. Tell us about that.
Yeah, he has a story to tell. I guess he was a CMS graduate, failed third grade and seventh grade, and was still able to graduate on time and was still able to go on to higher levels. And now he's a doctorate. And he also got the support of the Black Political Caucus. And when talking to Black Political Caucus members, they said that, you know, he's a minister and also he's a Black male. So therefore, that is a perspective that people can come on the board having a Black male perspective. And so so a lot of people liked him, and he also resonated well with the students there at the at their forum last week.
And he did get the Charlotte Mecklenburg Association of Educators endorsement also.
Yeah.
I lost my place on the ballot. When we come back, we're coming up to a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Stephanie Sneed. She is actually the final candidate that we have not discussed yet. And beyond that, all kinds of school board issues to get into, including the new equity committee, the future of the superintendent, and that next bond package, among other issues. Stay with us right here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. We are discussing today the school board elections. I have a panel of experts here, Dedrick Russell from WBTV, Andos Helms from WFAE, and Annie Ma from the Charlotte Observer. And we have one candidate to go on the ballot. She is Stephanie Sneed. She's a former trial lawyer for Child Protective Services, and she has worked extensively in education advocacy. What's her campaign about?
Stephanie talks a lot about, while the big picture is really important and needs to be sort of the board's like guiding light, she also talks about things that can make concrete differences in kids' lives today. And so she is really talked a lot about like what can you do immediately to make things better for kids in CMS, and in conjunction with the broad like big picture goals that the board has wanted to tackle.
And she also received the endorsement of the Black Political Caucus. And in talking to members, they say one reason they chose her because she has a law background, and that will bring diversity to the school board, as the general counsel George Battle is leaving, then having somebody on the school board who can go over what you can do and what you can't do to bring that that gravitas, to bring that knowledge to the school board, I think that would add a feather in the school board's cap.
And that this is her second run. She also got the CMAE endorsement. It's interesting that the Black Political Caucus and the teachers group endorsed the same three, except that the CMAE also endorsed Elise Dashew. So you can't vote for four, but I think they're saying you have four really good choices.
Leave it up to you, right? Yeah.
So those are the 13 candidates we just went through. Voters can choose three. Early voting has already begun, and Election Day is November the 5th. I want to go to a question from one of our listeners on Facebook. Says, if Elise Dashew is being groomed for chair and seems to have a particularly bad relationship with Matthews in Huntersville, is that going to deepen the rift?
Well, you know, actions are always taken by the full board. The chairperson does not have some kind of super vote or power. They have to organize and sort of read the will of the board. So, but yeah, I mean, if you're a voter in those areas and you are unhappy about the way CMS has treated you, that's probably not going to play in Elise Dashew's favor when you're voting.
This is a question that I think everyone will want to weigh in on. And as Barbara emails, she says, we hear a lot from candidates about how they will evaluate the performance of the next superintendent. Given the turnover in the job over the last 10 years, has anyone talked about what the school board should be doing differently to improve superintendent tenure? What qualities should voters be looking for in the candidates who are entrusted with such an important decision?
Well, I think they did it this go round. Instead of going outside, they went inside. And I guess since I've been covering CMS, this is my first time where they have chosen someone from the inside. So I guess you have Ernest Winston. He's been with the district for more than a dozen years. So people, they know his work ethic. They know what he stands for. They know what he can do. And they're going to surround him with people who can help him, you know, take this district from point A to point B. So I think that that's one thing that they decided. Instead of having another national search, why don't we just look who's on our bench right now? And I think that that's why they picked Ernest Winston. He has a 3-year contract, so I'm pretty sure he has hit the ground running. And when you talk to school board members, so far they are pleased with what he's doing.
And that's actually one of the questions that we asked on our voter guide. So you can go to that at WFAE.org and see what everybody said. Interestingly, nobody is saying, we don't like Ernest Winston, we need to get rid of him and start a new search. Everybody is wanting to give him a chance, wanting to see how he does. He does have a 3-year contract, but it's this weird one where they actually have, with no reason at all, they can give him 60 days notice and say, we're moving on. So one of two things is going to happen. Either at some point the board will decide, you know, he's not working out, we need to exercise that, or they're going to be really pleased with his performance. And I said during this whole transition that his resume probably would not have gotten him onto the short list for a district this size if somebody was doing a search. But if he gets in a couple of good years, that's going to change. He is going to become somebody that's going to be sought after. And
so this works both ways.
Right. So, and by private companies that could say, you can stay in Charlotte, we'll pay you a lot more, you can work a lot less. So right now it's, is he going to work out and do they want to keep him? But it could very much in the next 4 years become, can we keep him?
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I remember during the transition, one sentiment I heard about the strengths of picking someone like Ernest, who has such deep ties to Charlotte, is that he's not going to treat CMS as a stepping stone. But it's interesting, you know, you raise the point that like maybe that is inevitable if he does really well here. And it sounds like he's on track to do really well in CMS.
And it's so interesting that with the charter schools, you know, everyone loves charter schools, but charter schools, they don't play by the same rules as public schools. So therefore, a charter school, if you're a great person who is a custodian but who can reach a kid, then the charter school will hire you without a teaching certificate. So if it's good for the charter schools, then, you know, it should be good for the public schools. If you have a good person who can get the job done, no matter the degree, and I guess education does help, but I guess history shows that we've had two doctors who have been superintendents, and they did not last more than 2 years.
And he did meet the legal requirements. There
right,
is sort
exactly,
of the thing
right,
that says,
right.
you know, X amount of experience
exactly.
and degrees, but then there's also...
He had not been a principal, for example, correct?
Right.
right.
But he did get the state's
executive
approval.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting. In this election, you know, you have three school board members, so will that change the tide? And I know that in the forums that I have conducted, I know that each person said that and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that each candidate said that they do support Ernest Winston, and they would not, if elected, they would not, you know, have something to get rid of him.
I have heard some of them saying we need more specific goals for the superintendent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But apparently something nebulous has happened behind the scenes, and it went from, yay, you know, Clayton Wilcox, we want to extend your contract and give you a raise, to been nice knowing you. So, I think Elise Dasher was the only one of the candidates who actually knows what happened, because they have signed legal documents and been very mum about this. And so, interestingly, nobody that I have talked to has said, I am going to go in there and demand that they release this information, because I think they do realize that may be legally impossible at this point. But they have said, we need to not have this happen again, where, you know, people think he's doing great and then he's not. We need to make it really clear what we expect of a superintendent.
And for people who don't follow the intricacies of school board politics, Clayton Wilcox was here, in essence, 2 years.
Yep.
Then he was abruptly suspended in July, and then he resigned. And we still don't know why. And also, another unusual aspect of this is that he did not get a severance payout. He just went away with no payout. And then we were just talking about Ernest Winston, who was appointed on an interim basis or an acting basis, and then the board unanimously approved him in August. And so that's where we stand. And if you're wondering why there are all these comments and questions about superintendent tenure, it's because we've had six superintendents in the past 10 years. Obviously, that's not sustainable. I mean, maybe it is, but people don't want it to be sustainable, correct? I mean, that seems to me the overriding issue, that student achievement, equity, and obviously construction of schools. Those seem to be sort of the pillars of this campaign.
And I think the school board is answering that, I guess, with the Office of Transparency and Compliance. This new chief
compliance reported on that. Yeah, tell us about that.
Will be able to investigate any allegations of inappropriate behavior or inappropriate actions from the superintendent, the general counsel, and associate superintendents. And this, the school system did not have anything like this in place, because we've heard of, you know, allegations with Dr. Morrison. So therefore, if there is a concern facing, you know, the higher ups, that there is now an Office of Compliance and Transparency, and there will be a Chief Officer of Compliance. So, woo.
And it is tempting to joke that it's now a full-time job to investigate the superintendent and CMS, but that's not really the full scope. In fact, I think that's something they hope that that person will
comes
never
with
have
a badge
to do.
And,
But it will be compliance with, I mean, there are so many federal and state and local regulations, and they have run into problems with that. Like, for instance, the thing which apparently was not really what led to Clayton Wilcox being pushed out, but they did sign a contract for criminal background checks that did not include fingerprinting. Apparently a lot of districts did the same, but that actually doesn't comply with state law. So,
and there were
something things like that. They're saying, we need somebody who's not basically so enmeshed in the department that they're just going to nod and say, you know, yeah, whatever the department head says, that's fine, that we need this office. And they haven't said what it'll cost. They haven't said how many people. I would bet that they'll pull some people from other departments, that it won't be totally new, but give it some independence and some clout.
And we'll see with the upcoming budget, because I guess they'll be making their budget. So we'll see where the line item is for this new Office of Compliance and Transparency.
And Dedrick, I believe you reported that with the fingerprinting issue, 3,500 employees, give or take, were hired over a year-long period that were not fingerprinted. And CMS has since gone back and fingerprinted all of them for vetting and background checks. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. I have to get an updated to see if all of those people have gotten their fingerprints. But I know that in the letter that they originally sent, that there was a deadline that you should have your fingerprints, and you're supposed to go down to the sheriff's office to get your fingerprints so that information can be used to figure out, you know, if you are able to teach our kids.
And Annie, you know, when we talk about this issue of compliance, you had worked on a story, I believe, with Fred Clayson Kelly recently about potential conflicts of interest in terms of Clayton Wilcox and the way he handled vendors and contracting. So it looks like that will be a bigger point of emphasis or area of focus for CMS going forward.
I actually have not heard a lot about it on the campaign trail in terms of candidates talking about it. So in that case, a lot of it was a personal involvement in the procurement process for software. It would be interesting to see if that falls under the compliance office or if it'll just mean stricter review process internally in the academic programs department. But I have not really heard candidates talk about
it. But you do wonder how that would have played out if that same whistleblower letter, which was a credible person within CMS, said, this really doesn't smell right.
Right.
Had there been an independent office, would there have been more flags raised and more of a strong message to the superintendent that no?
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's interesting that it kind of like what you guys have said, the compliance structure for the higher ups is sort of not there. When I was doing that story, I was reading through all these board policies about how you report sort of issues with compliance or just like misconduct at work, and it's all like reported to the superintendent. It's like, okay, but what if the superintendent is the one doing the thing that needs to be reported? So it'll be interesting to see if there's some internal change about those policies and whether a separate watchdog who reports directly to the board and has sort of power of that kind of oversight will be a new avenue for sort of that kind of enforcement.
And as we're going through, we've talked a lot this hour, obviously, about the school board election, 13 candidates for 3 at-large seats, and all these issues that they will face when they when the winners are members of the school board. And there were a couple of big stories this week I want to get to. One is this equity committee, 41 people. I don't know if 41 people can order lunch, much less decide something complicated like racial equity. So how is this going to work?
Here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Charlotte thing. And talk about long ballots. They had, and Annie and I were talking about this, the press release ended up saying 350 applicants. I saw under 300 counting them up. So I'm not quite sure where all, but there were a lot, let's just say that, a lot more than they could accommodate. So people really wanted to do this. And this, the people that I know that they chose really are diverse in geography, in demographics, in perspectives. So that's going to be interesting. But like you say, where can they go with this? There were actually so many CMS employees who wanted to be on that, understandably, because those decisions really affect them, that Ernest Winston announced that not only will there be a 41-person group advising the board, but there will be an employee task force advising the advisory committee that advises the board. So I'm not sure whether to like laugh or cheer for civic engagement.
But, you know, now is the time to get the work done, you know, because equity has been screaming throughout the whole district. So therefore, if equity is a concern, then you have to be able to show us that it is a concern. And I think that they're probably just saving face to make sure that, hey, we need an equity committee. That was the community has been saying, bring back the equity committee. So the equity committee is here. So now time will tell if the equity committee can get the job done and if they can do it in a fast pace.
Well, the committee can't get the job done. Ultimately, that's staff, that's the superintendent, and that's where this interaction becomes so interesting. I mean, school board candidates can't go in and say, I will reassign teachers. That's a superintendent responsibility. But that's where you see that interaction. We actually had two superintendents who said, look, we really need to get better teachers into some of these most struggling schools. I have the authority by policy to reassign them. Can I do that? And these two had the public discussion, and we heard the school board members say, oh, no, that's not a good idea. And there are legitimate reasons why it might not be. So the school board is essentially setting out the parameters in which the superintendent and staff work. But ultimately, this is a staff job, and it's not going to happen fast.
Right. Well, and I guess the equity committee can be the eyes and ears for the school board and can tell the school board what needs to happen, what the community is saying, what the parents are saying in order to get it done. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes you can be tone deaf. But if you have somebody out boots on the ground saying, hey, this needs to happen in order to move the needle forward, then I think that the school board has no choice but to listen who they decided to appoint, who they appointed.
Let me squeeze in two more issues. One is Cornelius essentially received a get-out-of-jail-free card this week, and also this idea of another bond. There was the largest bond, $1 billion, passed 2 years ago. So very quickly, what do we think the price range of the next bond is, and why is Cornelius free?
Well, the easier question is Cornelius is free because they had a study commission to look at their needs and what breaking off from CMS might look like. And they kind of came back and were like, well, you know, what's best for the kids is to work with CMS. And Elise Dash, you called it, I think she called it an olive branch. And so for them, it's like a good way to repair that relationship and move forward.
Got it. And any guesses on the bond issue?
Well, they always start with a list of projects and a priority, and they always say this is absolutely non-political, totally objective, and it always gets political. So
all right.
That's the first step we're going to see.
You get the last word. Andos Helms from WFAE.
Man, I was going to weigh in.
Okay. Dedrick Russell from WBTV. Annie Ma from the Charlotte Observer. Go to WFAE.org to read the voter's guide. Again, November 5th, early voting has already begun. Thank you so much to the panel. Thanks to Mike Collins. I'm Eric Spanberg. Thanks for listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.